submission. We put the crowd out. This pumping rhythm is hitting. We wanna make it clear. We ain't scared. This is the vision we want. We want, we want, we want, we want, we want, we want, we want.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Today's show, we celebrate independent journalism and transparency in government in furtherance of social justice. Independent journalist Abby Martin joins the program to talk about her work on Breaking the Set and with Media Roots. Also, we celebrate Sunshine Week in honor of open government. Later in the show, Tanya Ward Jordan, president of Coalition for Change, joins the show, along with attorney Michael McCray, to talk about the Federal Employee Anti-Discrimination Act of 2015. Finally on the show, it's Social Justice Week in Northern California. We'll hear from conference organizer Shelby Wade. Please stay with us. Welcome to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. Before we begin today's program, we would like to dedicate today's show to one of the great independent journalists, filmmakers, and activists of our time, the great Danny Schechter, who sadly passed away after an illness just the other day. And here is Peter Phillips to talk a little bit about Danny Schechter. Peter?
Danny Schechter was a longtime friend of Project Censored, a winner of two of our awards. He was a media channel founder and executive director of Global Vision, an award-winning media company formed in 1987. He is a winner of Emmy Awards, the George Polk Award, Major Armstrong Award, awards from the National Association of Black Journalists. He's director, principal newscaster for a number of major radio stations, but he in particular worked for 2020 and ABC for several years, leading television magazine. He's going to be sadly missed. Our show today is dedicated to Danny Schechter.
That's right. And again, you can be looking for updates at Project Censored. We'll likely be posting some of our interviews with Danny Schechter. He, of course, had interviewed us a number of times. And again, it's a big loss. So our show today goes out to Danny Schechter. So that said, Peter, we're going to begin the program right now with a fantastic independent journalist, someone who is also on the board at Media Freedom Foundation and Project Censored with us. We are joined by Abby Martin. And Peter, would you like to introduce Abby for us today?
Well, Abby is the former host of Breaking the Set at Russia Today, which she did for close to 3 to 4 years, and co-founder of Media Roots, and has been on the board of directors of Media Freedom Foundation Project Censored now for close to 5 years. So, Abby, welcome to our show.
Thank you so much, Peter and Mickey. Great to be on. Good to be back.
It was wonderful to be able to watch you on RT television on a regular basis. You broke some amazing stories there. Tell us briefly your history there, and what were some of the key stories you thought were most important that you did during your tenure?
Well, you know, right now we have this Cold War resurrection going on across the establishment, political establishment and media establishment. So working at Russia Today, it's kind of hard to be taken seriously by like the stenographer, professional journalist in D.C. But I always tell people, you have to ask people, why are young journalists who are very eager to expose corruption going to RT to tell the news? And that's because RT is a state-run channel similar to BBC and Al Jazeera. And on state-run media, you can talk about corporations. I got to talk about everything from Nestle, Monsanto, BP, empire, militarism. I mean, I was constantly out there sticking my neck out and just being very staunch across the board in my beliefs and never wavered in those. And RT gave me the freedom and editorial control that I could go out there and basically just be consistent in my values. And it was a really incredible experience. But at the end of the day, I do want to go back to my independent roots and be kind of independent from any sort of state or corporate control and really get on the ground running and focus on investigative journalism and meeting the people behind the stories. Because, you know, there's only so much you can do to react to the news cycle. You guys know how it is. You live this every day. It gets tiring. It gets very toxifying. And sometimes you need to step back and say, hey, I'm not going to just react to what these people are creating the reality for me. Like Karl Rove said, I want to create my own reality and really get in these stories myself.
Abby Martin, that's great. I actually thought of Karl Rove immediately before you referenced him. you'll keep up with us. We keep doing it, and you'll keep telling our stories, trying to keep up with us. But that's really not what journalists are supposed to do, and they're not supposed to be stenographers to the people that are in power. And it's not just about, you know, what you did at RT and breaking the set, speaking truth to power. Speaking truth is power, and you have a long history already of standing up to global giants, transnational corporations, Nestle. You even stood up some to the Russian government on their own station, which they were unhappy about. We were quite interested to see that, you know, you were making some of the rounds on CNN and other places. And as they tried to sort of couch you in their own propaganda blitz, you know, to talk about what's wrong with RT, you flipped it right around and were saying about how it was the same thing that was wrong with them. And in particular, Piers Morgan didn't even get it. It like went right over his head.
Right, because that's what these people are there for. You know, when I confronted Piers Morgan about self-censorship and going back to the funding, right? I mean, every mainstream network, and RT is mainstream in a sense. I mean, it has huge funding. It's the Russian government. Every mainstream network has questionable funding. The question is, are you going to navigate around the bias? Is it an obvious bias that you can easily navigate around to find the truth and to get those dissenting opinions from that network? To Russia Today, it's in the name. It's very easy. You're probably not going to get the truth about Russia watching Russia Today. So I'd rather know that going into watching RT than I would watching, you know, the six corporate-controlled news conglomerates. I mean, 90% of what Americans see, hear, and read is controlled, obviously, by six corporations. And I'd rather know Russia Today has a bias from Russia and then go to MSNBC, CNN, and it's not only the parent companies, General Electric and Viacom and all these other networks, it's the thousands of corporate sponsorships and advertisements on those networks. And that produces a culture of self-censorship. But people like Piers Morgan don't even understand that because they were picked precisely because they wouldn't ask those hard questions. It's the same thing with people like Larry King. They are in those positions of power precisely because they are the perfect yes men and lackeys to the establishment that they will never ask hard questions. And so he was just astounded. He said, I don't self-censor. I could say whatever the hell I want. And it's like, well, you know, let's say you try to buck one of the advertisers or you know, U.S. militarism or empire peers, and let's see how that goes over for you.
Well, Abby, what's interesting is, you know, Michael Parenti once said that you say what you want because the owners and advertisers like what you say.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's certainly what we see. And in fact, you know, over the years when you were doing Breaking the Set, and of course we were guests on your show a number of times, which was just a fantastic experience to really get the word out and to show people what really can be going on in the news. And I would always tell people that it's a sad day when you have to rely on news media run by other governments to find out what's going on in your own country. And you got a lot of flack for being on RT. And I mean, honestly, I know you had to grow far wearier than I, but I grew weary having to defend the notion that somehow that RT was a propaganda outlet as if all the others were not. And I repeatedly would tell people, go to the Breaking the Set show, go to the guests, go to the interviews, go to the questions, go to the content, not the ad hominems, the red herrings, the straw person, just go to the content and see what's going on there. Focus on the content. And that's something that you've done for a long time over the years. And you still do with the website that you founded, mediaroots.org.
Yeah, and of course it grows weary because, you know, it gets to the point where it's so babyish and it's such a gross generalization. And to dismiss an entire news network that actually is crucial. It is crucial to hear the Russian perspective. Of course it is, especially when we're being countered and propelled with anti-Russian propaganda 24/7. We have to have a Russian voice out there kind of countering that. I actually vocally spoke out against the Russian government several times. I made that very clear that I would risk my job to do that whenever I felt necessary. But of course I wasn't going out there every day and talking about Putin's police state and pussy riots. I'm not Russian. I know America. Those are the issues that I care about. I feel like I can change this country from within. Every show packed more information than an entire year of watching CNN. It had long-form debates, discussions about tactics, gave voices to grassroots activists, independent musicians and artists, and prolific journalists that simply and cannot, will, and will never be heard or seen on the mainstream media. So any time someone tries to levy that insult that, you know, it's Russian propaganda, I just ask them, okay, do you think that Al Jazeera employees are Qatari propagandists? Do you think Rachel Maddow is a General Electric corporate propagandist? No, that's ridiculous. It's babyish. Talk about the facts. Let's have a conversation about the facts. And I found that people just use this criticism when they don't want to look at facts because it might challenge or threaten their worldview or the conventional wisdom that they adhere to. And that's actually a really sad state of affairs, because if you look back at Al Jazeera right after 9/11, not only was the CIA spending millions of dollars giving it to a con man who tried to con the CIA to say that he could decipher Al-Qaeda transmissions through Al Jazeera broadcasts, but the U.S. government and political and media establishment were calling Al Jazeera a terrorist mouthpiece and bin Laden's news network. So I think it all is relative to the political climate and time, but if people can't see through that, then we're in a grave crisis of critical thinking here.
You know, Abby, we're often asked when we speak out in various places what news sources we trust. And RT has certainly been on the top of my list for international news. And certainly the propaganda machine around the Ukraine is certainly one element of that that has been highly propagandized in corporate media in the U.S. So what's next for you, Abby? Media Roots is online. You have maintained that. Will we see bigger and better things from there, or what are your plans?
Yeah, and I wanted to piggyback off your point really quickly about the Russian fervor and kind of this propaganda, dueling narratives. And, you know, it's hard when Russia's denying any involvement in Ukraine. It would be much easier if Putin admitted that he was involved. So when you have, you know, Russia denying any involvement at all, and then the U.S. government just openly funding with lethal aid the Ukrainian government. I mean, we're in a very disturbing situation, and unfortunately, it's really hard to get the truth on the ground because of how dangerous it is in Ukraine, and it's really hard to get kind of independent reporting from that area without those state influences. What's next for me? It was an amazing 3 years, incredible support. I think people really love seeing a passionate, empathic journalist who cares about the issues and goes balls to the wall and isn't afraid and has a very overt bias, because we all have biases, and I'd rather know the person's bias than tiptoe around that and, you know, try to figure out what really is going on. So I'm going to stay true to myself. I'm going to go out and try to get into the grassroots, get to the heart of the story, produce podcasts, multimedia, interviews. I'm taking a cross-country road trip where I'm going to be kind of collecting all of these things either for a mini-documentary or just producing multimedia on the way. I have many offers from print and video, but the question is, can I have the show vision that I want without being kind of overworked with a skeleton crew like I was, toward the end of my time at RT? And it's just too hard. I mean, 5 days a week live television show. Once again, it's kind of, you're in this cycle where you can't really do any long-form investigative journalism. You can't even really have any kind of in-depth discussion on certain issues because you have to keep following this format for TV. And I just wanted to break free of that, break that set, focus on art. I know, Mickey, you're obviously a musician, an incredible musician, and you know how important kind of integrating that is to have a holistic, you know, well-being and mental health without driving yourself crazy. So just focusing a lot on different things, doing speaking engagements and everything like that, hopefully collaborating more with Project Censored.
We certainly look forward to that, Abby Martin. And people can see more about your work, your artwork, at abbymartin.org. And you're going to be in San Francisco with us at the Possible Conference, May 30, 31. That's in San Francisco. We'll certainly be telling people more about that. We wish you all the best in your endeavors, and we certainly look forward to working with you more as we get into the future, really pushing the importance and significance of critical media literacy. That's certainly something that we're about, helping make the public more self-sufficient, self-reliant, so that they're less susceptible to the barrage of propaganda, corporate propaganda, and government propaganda. And Abby Martin, thank you for breaking the set.
You guys rock. Talk to you soon.
We will, certainly.
Bye.
After this musical break, we will be back talking about Sunshine Week. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. We now turn our attention to Sunshine Week, and it's about transparency and openness in government. Let me introduce our next guest. Our first guest that's joining us about Sunshine Week, about the No Fear Act, is Tanya Ward Jordan. She is president of the Coalition for Change, met last year at the National Whistleblowers Summit, and she's here to talk to us about some things that are going on in Washington, D.C. to help reinforce transparency in government. Shortly, we'll also be joined by attorney Michael McCray, and we'll be again discussing updates on Federal Employee Anti-Discrimination Act. Tanya Ward Jordan, you're with us by phone.
Thank you so much, Mickey. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show today. As founder and president of the Coalition for Change, it's quite a pleasure. And I must say that not only is it appreciated, it's quite timely because, as you stated, it's Sunshine Week. And, of course, we're promoting open government and saying open government leads to good government. And so we're celebrating that. I'd like to cover, if I may, with your listening audience, three key things. And I'd like to talk about C4C, our organization, get into the pending bill, which is entitled the Federal Employee Anti-Discrimination Act of 2015, and then kind of close out by talking about the importance of this bill and why it's important not just to federal employees, but the public at large. So that's what I'd like to share with the audience today.
Well, that sounds great, Tanya. So why don't you go ahead and do that and tell folks what is Coalition for Change, and then go ahead and segue right into what you're doing here.
Will do. Well, C4C, Coalition for Change, we use that as the acronym, C4C, serves as an emotional and informational support network for individuals who are injured as a result of federal work discrimination and reprisal. And our members are present and former federal employees, civil servants who seek to uphold the public trust, and includes veterans, active militaries, and others. I actually founded C4C in 2008 and later incorporated in 2009 in Washington, D.C., after my personal pain of litigation and dealing with my employer in a discrimination, class action discrimination, after about 10 years, I settled that, and I wanted to give my pain a purpose, help others, and I formed a large online, mostly online network. We do also have meetings, but we use social media a lot to advocate for the civil service who seek to uphold the public good and let the public know about the risks of not monitoring and enforcing anti-discrimination laws and how it affects them. So that's basically what C4C is and does. What I really wanted to also tell your public about today, the listening audience, is about a bill. It's called the Federal Employee Anti-Discrimination Act of 2015. And it serves to do a lot of what we're talking about today, promoting transparency in government, for example. The bill is sponsored by Congressman Elijah Cummings. He's the ranking member of the Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, and he's also the representative for the Baltimore, Maryland region. The bill, and again, it's not yet law, and we hopefully, if we get enough people behind it, it can become law. The bill amends a prior anti-discrimination laws to provide more accountability and transparency in the federal government. And just to give you a little bit of origin, how it came about, myself and our civil rights chair, Paulette Taylor, who's a constituent out of Baltimore, we recognize that the culture of the federal government is such as putting the public at risk. And we've gotten constant complaints about what's going on in the federal government from air traffic controllers, from agents, U.S. Marshals, prison guards, and so on and so on. And this oppressive behavior and discriminatory behavior and retaliatory behavior is bleeding into government's programs and services. And so we said, how can we better address this so that civil servants who want to speak out for the public good can do so in a better way, not so much to put themselves at risk, to minimize the risk to themselves, and also to better protect the public. So we approached the congressman with a number of measures, and he listened to our concerns, and with the staff, they have since adopted many of them and have integrated it in this bill called the Federal Employee Anti-Discrimination Act of 2015.
That's the voice of Tanya Ward Jordan. I'm going to come back to you here in a moment. I just wanted to bring Michael McCray into the conversation. Michael McCray, legal counsel, FEWLEF, Federally Employed Women Legal Education Fund, also working on legislation that'll be introduced by Representative Elijah Cummings in support of National Sunshine Week. And this legislation strengthens the original No Fear Act. Michael McCray, again, it was a pleasure to meet you last year at the National Whistleblower Summit, and you're joining us today by phone also.
All right. Hello, Mickey, and how you doing, Tanya?
Michael, tell us what's going on at your end and what your role in this is.
Again, I'm an advocate. I support whistleblower rights. I support new legislation, and, you know, we're kind of in the tail end of Sunshine Week. But I was asked to be on this call today to kind of support the new Coalition for Change and the work that they're doing with the No Fear Act. And also there's a whistleblower, augmented reward, and non-retaliation act. And so that's another act that's kind of, it goes towards the banking sectors and trying to protect financial whistleblowers. And essentially what Warren is this an act that's kind of modeled after the False Claims Act. For those of you who don't know what the False Claims Act is, it's basically a bounty recovery reward act that was brought into existence by President Abraham Lincoln, well, right after Reconstruction. And essentially what was going on was there was a lot of contractor fraud in the federal government where, you know, contractors were overbidding and doing some unscrupulous things while we were trying to rebuild the union. And so what our President Lincoln did was to create a reward system. So if anyone had information about people that were defrauding the government, that it made it possible for them to receive up to 25% to 30% of whatever the federal government was able to recover. So that has been one of the most effective tools that whistleblowers have. And basically the Warren Act is one that's going to take that model into the banking and financial sectors. So as we saw over the past decade, where we've had a lot of investment fraud and Wall Street fraud, foreclosures, securities fraud that almost impacted the global economy, this is designed to add some very needed protections for whistleblowers that are inside financial institutions so that they can report wrongdoing and not lose their careers.
Michael McCray, hi, this is Peter Phillips, co-host with Mickey here on Project Censored Show. The Federal Employee Anti-Discrimination Act of 2015, you're talking about financial institutions being involved. What are some of the main reasons, though, that what's lacking in current law that's so necessary to protect whistleblowers in the United States?
There are actually two laws that the community, that the Make It Safe Coalition is currently supporting. One is the Federal Employee Anti-Discrimination Act. That's kind of the thing that Tanya was just talking about. That's the non-discrimination in the federal sector. The other is the Whistleblower Augmented Reward and Non-Retaliation Act. That's the one that's directed towards the financial sector. And really what it's doing is it's putting on par the whistleblower protections that occurs in other sectors. It's bringing that to the financial sector. And what the reason that this was necessary is that the old whistleblower laws that protected the banking sector, basically, they came out of the savings and loan crisis a few decades ago. And what happened is, relatively speaking, they have low damage caps or awards. What we were seeing in the financial sector was that a lot of these finance companies were putting in gag provisions in their contracts. And knowing, again, being in the financial sector is highly lucrative. So what they were able to do through their employment contracts was basically to make people waive their whistleblower rights, or a lot of these people don't even have knowledge of what the whistleblower statutes are. So what Warren does is basically it makes it illegal for financial companies to place those type of oppressive gag orders and non-disclosure agreements as a condition for employment or for bonuses. And it also mandates that people in the financial sector actually be educated on what their rights as whistleblowers are. So it's kind of a best practice in how to protect free speech and whistleblowers. And the reason is that we have a perfect example where the failure to heed financial whistleblowers really contributed to a near global financial collapse.
Tanya Ward Jordan, let's bring you back in, Coalition for Change. I know you had some more things that you wanted to say when we were bringing Michael McCray into the conversation. Do you want to continue with the points you were making or tag on to Michael?
Yes, I will. With regard to the Federal Employee Anti-Discrimination Act of 2015, there were a number of measures, over 13, but I just like to highlight at least four of them. One of them, getting into the transparency, because that's one of the things we were talking about with the Sunshine Week. With this new bill, this will hopefully become law, there will be a complaint tracking system. In other words, it'll be able to show from the time an employee or someone who files a complaint against the federal government, from the point they file through until closure, it'll tell exactly how much time is spent in that complaint system. And the reason why that is important, because the federal government, unfortunately, is really using a lot of the taxpayers' money to protract these complaints, and they're going on and on because it's like a slush fund, unlimited funds, and it's coming out of the taxpayers' coffers. So by having this transparency feature, the complaint tracking system, and this bill would make it so that each federal agency will have to track, you will be able to see the movement of those types of complaints. For example, in a case like Janet Howard versus Commerce, the Matthew Fogg versus Justice, those complaints, one went 25 years and the other one's going 25 and counting. And that's coming out of our money, our taxpayers' money. So we'll be able to trace that now under this bill. Another transparency measure is there'll be electronic notices to employees when there is a finding of discrimination or retaliatory act. And so we'll have more of a tracking system to see the occurrences of this, and also it would put the employees on notice who in subjected to this hostile working environment. From an accountability standpoint, one of the problems that we have in government, whether we're talking this particular bill or the Warren Act, there's still, we need mandatory discipline, because right now the public official can literally break civil rights laws. And I know 50 years ago or so, we had the Civil Rights, Title VII Civil Rights Act passed, and it's supposed to deter or eliminate or make unlawful discrimination of all forms, whether it's age, race, gender, etc. And, you know, a lot of people think, oh, that passed, everything's fine. Well, it's not fine. The law was passed, but there was nothing to mandate discipline. And so this is what we're pushing for. And while this particular bill falls slightly short of the discipline, we are pushing for that. What we have in this bill is a sense from Congress that they recognize now the disciplinary piece is critical, and for that reason, they do integrate some tracking features to make sure that happens. Because when you have situations, for example, in the Veterans Affairs, your listeners and yourself heard about how a lot of veterans weren't getting care, et cetera. Well, government interfaces in all our lives, Veterans Affairs, USDA, with the agriculture, with the food we eat. It touches every segment of our life. But back to the Veterans Affairs situation, we had a situation with one of our members long ago. He was a veteran, a U.S. Marine, and he used to work at the Veterans Affairs. And he tried to disclose long before the CNN reports, long before the Secretary Krzyzewski stepped down, he tried to report that they were not providing veterans with care and that he was ordered to destroy records. His name is Oliver Mitchell. Anyone can Google him. And what the government did, they kind of coerced him into doing the settlement agreement. Well, he did this settlement agreement. I do have a copy of the settlement agreement. And he settled out his interest, and it barred him from making the disclosure about what was going on in the VA. And so we brought that to Congressman Cummings' attention, and we said one of the things we wanted in this bill is we wanted such that no federal agency can bar any employee from settling out interest that may be detrimental to the public. We just can't have those kind of things where something could be a threat to national security or to the public at large, to the veterans or to whomever, and it be buried in a settlement agreement. Those are the kinds of things that we wanted to make sure that was in this bill, and the congressman agreed. So this is going forward.
Tanya Ward Jordan, President, Coalition for Change. You have a website for Coalition for Change, a place people can learn more?
Yes, we do. It's www.coalition4change.org. And I encourage people to look for that bill, Federal Employee Anti-Discrimination Act of 2015. We are looking for supporters of that bill. So you can email me, Tanya Ward Jordan, at coalition4change.org. And let me know you're interested in the bill, and so we can get some support for it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tanya Ward Jordan, President, Coalition for Change. Michael McRae, you're still with us.
Yes, sir.
Please, again, tell us a little bit more about what you expect to have happen here by the end of March how are you moving forward? And I know, you know, there's going to be another whistleblower summit again coming up here in the summer, and Project Censored is happy to be involved in that in some way. Very important work that you all are doing along with so many other transparency groups, whether it's Project on Government Oversight or Government Accountability Project. But tell us from your estimation, what do you want to see coming out of this here?
We're kind of dealing with two events. One is Sunshine Week, and later this summer, we're going to have the next Whistleblower Summit for Civil and Human Rights, which will be July 29th through the 31st. They're both very important in terms of transparency and whistleblowers. Sunshine Week tends to focus on kind of the like freedom of information aspects and making sure that government information is transparent and open to the public, including the media. Sunshine Week approaches it from the prospect of freedom of speech, protecting the public's right to know, and how that is so central to our democracy. And so in Sunshine Week, you'll find like a lot of newspapers, news organizations, the Associated Press, journalism schools, and, you know, and such, all the way down to even high school students. That's a little bit different. That's a very important focus, whereas during the Whistleblower Summit, we're kind of looking at, well, and also whistleblowers are part of Sunshine Week because they also provide some of the information that we need in order for the government to be more transparent. But the Whistleblower Summit takes a slightly different approach. It kind of focuses on the whistleblowers and the role that they play in terms of getting this information out to the public, and then also looking at free speech rights as a human and a civil right. We have a broad coalition, the Make It Safe Coalition, which is from 300 or 400 different advocacy groups, advocacy organizations, individual whistleblowers, advocates, and even some labor unions. So it's a broad coalition that works on these types of issues really year-round. And so from time to time, we'll have different. Sunshine Week is one event. Whistleblower Summit is another. And there are other events that occur during the year as well. So what we're trying to do for Sunshine Week is to bring more focus on the absolute need to know about FOIA and open access to government information. Sunshine Week was originally founded, I think, in 2002, and it started as Sunshine Sunday down in Florida. And I think the original date was meant to coincide with James Madison's birthday. So it's grown in strength, and, you know, Sunshine Week is a tremendous event now that's broadly supported all across the country. And the Whistleblower Summit basically grew from originally Washington Whistleblower Week, and that started in about 2007. And it's something that we're keeping going today.
Michael McCray, of course, sunlightfoundation.com is one place people can learn more information. Do you have another website or somewhere else that you'd like to direct people toward to learn more about all the things that you're doing?
Sure. One is you can go to www.whistleblowersummit.com. That's a place to kind of see, get more information about the upcoming summit and the Pillar Awards. And again, congratulations to Project Censored and you and Mickey and Peter for winning that award last year. And the other group that I work with is Acorn 8, and you can look that up at www.acorn8.com.
Thanks so much, Michael McCray. We look forward to hearing back from you as we approach the next Whistleblower Summit in the summer, and so we'll certainly be talking to you again.
Great. Thank you so much.
After this musical break, we'll be back talking about Social Justice Week events. Please stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm Mickey Huff with Peter Phillips. The remaining time we have on the program today is dedicated to something called Social Justice Week. And this is a conference that's taking place in Northern California at Sonoma State University. But it is going to be recorded. There will be videos from it. We'll be sharing those on the ProjectCensored.org website. So, of course, this show airs around the United States and over 20 cities. So we'll certainly be making some of the material available for people who are hearing us in other places. And this event, Peter Phillips here is going to talk to you about what's going on for the event, and he's going to introduce our first guest. Peter?
We're transitioning from Sunshine Week now to Social Justice Week, and our guest on the show today is Shelby Wade. She's a senior sociology major at Sonoma State University, president of the Sociology, Social Justice, and Activism Club, and the principal organizer for the first annual Social Justice Week at Sonoma State University. Shelby, are you with us?
I am.
Hi, Shelby. You came to us, transferred from Sierra College, and you did a Social Justice Week there. Can you tell us about that and what prompted you to try to do it here at Sonoma State?
Yeah, so like you said, I came from Sierra College, which is in kind of central California, but still northern, kind of by Sacramento. And we did a annual Social Justice Week there, and I was really inspired by two teachers, Jennifer Catman and Megan Seeley, who were sociology professors there. And they hosted this week-long of events, and it got the students really involved, got the community really involved, and I was just really inspired by that, and I wanted to continue that at whatever university I went to next. And so when I got to Sonoma State, I saw that there was a really big need for activism and just increasing knowledge on the campus and awareness about social justice issues in the community and around the world.
Well, Shelby, we put together on campus what I'm really seeing as needed for every campus in the country. Now, this is a national radio show, Pacifica radio show, and so there'll be campuses and students hearing this all over the United States. And we think that each year, campuses should, in fact, have a Social Justice Week where issues of great importance are addressed very openly. And in our case, students can actually get credit for this. Mm-hmm. And we have a number of really important keynote speakers coming in. And I think it's important to recognize that this was paid for with student money, that students are actually investing and putting forward for these kinds of events. So the whole conference, 30 hours of programming, was put together on a budget of under $5,000. And that's pretty remarkable for conferences right now. We have the campus facilities that's being used, so we're strongly encouraging other campuses around the country to take a look at this model and to think about the possibilities of Social Justice Week becoming a nationwide activity. Yeah. One of the keynote speakers that we'll be having is Roxanne Dunbar-Ortiz. She is the author of An Indigenous People's History of the United States. So we're going to play a short clip from the website Indigenous People History of the United States that promotes her activities and talks.
The history of the United States is a history of settler colonialism. The founding of a state based on the ideology of white supremacy, the widespread practice of African slavery, and a policy of genocide and land theft. Those who seek history with an upbeat ending, a history of redemption and reconciliation, may look around and observe that such a conclusion is not visible, not even in utopian dreams of a better society. Writing U.S. history from an indigenous people's perspective requires rethinking the consensual national narrative. That narrative is wrong or deficient, not in its facts, dates, or details, but rather in its essence. Inherent in the myth we've been taught is an embrace of settler colonialism and genocide. How might acknowledging the reality of U.S. history work to transform society? That is a central question this book pursues.
Today in the United States, there are more than 500 federally recognized indigenous communities and nations comprising nearly 3 million people. These individuals are the descendants of the once 15 million people who inhabited this land and are the subject of the latest book by noted historian and activist Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz, An Indigenous People's History of the United States. Dunbar Ortiz challenges the founding myths of the U.S. and shows how policy against the indigenous people was genocidal and imperialistic, designed to crush the original inhabitants. Spanning more than 300 years, the bottom-up history significantly reframes how we view our past. And told from the viewpoint of indigenous, it reveals how Native Americans for centuries actively resisted the expansion of the U.S. empire. Shelby Wade, you're the coordinator and founder for the Social Justice Week at Sonoma State. And you're kicking off the whole series with Roxanne Dunbar Ortiz. Why did the club pick her as one of the lead-off speakers?
Well, I think she tells kind of the beginning of at least this country's social injustices. It's kind of a good way to start off. You know, a lot of students still today don't really know the truth about the beginnings of this country. And I think that's where a lot of our problems derive, the way we interact with not only our own citizens, but with the world.
Shelby Wade, Mickey Huff here, co-host with Peter Phillips, Project Censored Show. Thank you so much for the work you did putting together this event. Peter and I will also be speaking as part of the event on money, power, and politics, and sort of the nexus between those. Particularly excited about Dr. Dunbar Ortiz, and those that might be familiar with her work certainly recognize an indigenous people's history of the United States, clearly riffing on Howard Zinn, the notion of history from the bottom up. And as someone that's a history professor at Diablo Valley College, you know, I use these kinds of resources in the classroom all the time. And I must say that it is still a challenge in 2015. There are still people that they are hearing many of these suppressed narratives for the first time. And I just like to remind folks, certainly in the Pacifica listening audience, again, for a lot of those folks, this might sound like old hat. But as someone that is teaching in the general public, certainly the work we do at Project Censored, it's the case that really there's a vast amount of people in the population that are wholly unaware of these narratives.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's kind of the point of this whole week, is we want to not just raise awareness, but get people to share the awareness and also act on it.
I noticed in the write-ups on Dunbar Ortiz's book, Indigenous People, History of the United States, she quotes Woody Guthrie, the song, "This Land is Your Land," kind of how it celebrates the land belongs to everybody, but it reflects the unconscious manifest destiny of white colonialism, and that this was at the expense of indigenous people who were already here, and that it was genocidal, and it was racist, and it was a colonial expansion that becomes buried in this myth. We still have Columbus Day in the United States as a federal holiday. So that's a long-standing sort of thing. So social justice implies a realistic look at these kinds of issues. So, Shelby, tell us what else is going to be happening at Sonoma State University, and what are some of the other key points that are going to be going on?
March actually marks the 50th anniversary of teach-ins on college campuses for awareness about the truths and the lies about the Vietnam War. And that's going to be taking place on Wednesday, our Foreign Affairs Day, with Veterans for Peace. They're going to be doing two sessions of sit-ins on waging war in Vietnam and beyond, as well as the PTSD and moral injury and the cost of war presentation. And then we'll also have a presentation on the Israel and Palestine conflict that day. On Tuesday, we're going to have a social justice day. We're going to have a lot of workshops on building a culture of peace, on nonviolence, on affinity and diversity groups. And then that night is our keynote speaker, Charlotte O'Neill, who also goes by Mama C. And she was a Black Panther in Kansas City and now resides with her husband in Tanzania, where they formed the United African Alliance Community Center to build community and efforts in rural Africa. On Thursday, we're going to have a Domestic Issues and Civil Liberties Day with a Know Your Rights and Police Accountability session, as well as a Q&A with the National Director of Move to Amend. And then that night is our keynote speaker, Peter Dale Scott, and he's going to be talking about the American Deep State.
Yeah, Shelby Wade, we're familiar with all of these people here at Project Censored. We've had many of them on the program. We've covered these issues in our books for years. I just wanted to point out that the thing that really struck me as so remarkable about this week-long series of events is that this is student-generated. Peter Phillips is the advisor to the Social Justice Club, the Sociology Club there at Sonoma State University. But, you know, this is the kind of thing that we do all around the U.S. Project Censored works with hundreds of students and almost 50 professors a year on service learning and outreach. And, you know, this is what we're talking about. This is a bottom-up grassroots kind of a model. This is students coming into the schools, the community colleges, and the institutions of higher education and universities, you know, and really using these resources in a way to reach out to their peers. And even at that level, as I said earlier, even at the college level, and Shelby, you know this as a student, you still don't always get these perspectives and you don't get to hear these speakers.
Absolutely. And that's what's needed on college campuses. I mean, you know, a lot of times we do just get, you know, the perspective of our teachers. And while that's very important and very beneficial to our knowledge, help from the outside is needed.
We think that this sort of model is something that campuses around the country should be seriously looking at. And this week, you know, we're to have 30 hours of programming. It's quite amazing. And people can see the entire program at projectcensored.org under our events. And many, many other groups are part of this. Code Pink and a variety of others are participating. I particularly am interested in the Police Accountability Day, Domestic Issues and Civil Liberties. Tell us a little bit about that.
PATCH, which is the Police Accountability Helpline, they're going to be joining with the ACLU, and they're going to be doing kind of a report card on Sonoma County, which is the current county that Sonoma State is in. They're going to be kind of doing a report card of the police in this county and doing kind of an assessment of what police accountability is, what our role is when interacting with the police. They're going to be giving out cards, both in English and Spanish, on what to do in different scenarios when you're encountering a police officer, whether it's in your car, whether it's being arrested, whether it's interacting from the street, which I think is really helpful. They're also going to be doing a Know Your Rights kind of seminar, informing students what their rights are and how to use them to their advantage. And then Move to Amend is also going to be doing a presentation on why companies should not be viewed as people.
After this musical break, we will be back. Stay with us. Shelby Wade, again, you mentioned Move to Amend, someone else we've worked with there in our last book, David Cobb, again, people at Move to Amend against corporate personhood and trying to challenge that and looking at the issue and the problem of money in politics. And, you know, that's, again, a really big concern here. Earlier in the program, we were talking about the Sunlight Foundation, transparency in government. You know, we really need to be made aware of the revolving doors between the corporate sector and the alleged public sector and, you know, the problems that creates for us in the public. And I know I teach a class called Money, Power, and Politics, so I deal with this issue a lot. Peter, maybe you can share a couple of things.
Well, certainly corporate power in the world is dominant today. We're seeing it manifested through NATO and through the U.S. military in terms of empire protecting capital growth and expansion. That's the agenda in the world today. And it's certainly one of the things that how this happens, the manipulations that go on inside of these governments, are one of the things that Peter Dale Scott is going to be speaking about. And I want to point out that the campus has been thrown open. This is open. All events are free and open to the public. There's no charge for any of these speakers. The club will be accepting donations for people that come through the door, but it's not required. And Peter Dale Scott, his book on the deep state, he documents the patterns of behavior of agents inside the U.S. government and corporations that have engaged in various activities over the past 50 years or even before. He says this guy actually goes back to the beginning of the United States, but there's always been elements inside the government that are repressive, that want to kind of repress democracy, repress transparency, and are on the move to kind of centralize power. And it's related to the Kennedy assassination, and certainly related to the Martin Luther King assassination, and certainly Peter Dale Scott talks about 9/11 and the avenues that that created for the expansion of concentration of power and limited civil liberties in the United States. Peter Dale is speaking Thursday night, and we're really looking forward to that part. Now, on Friday, Shelby, you're calling that the Social Justice Film Festival. What are some of the films that are going to be aired that day?
So we're going to be, of course, airing the Project Censored film. Veterans for Peace will be joining in the film festival and airing some of their videos on Vietnam and wars after that. We'll be airing Nuclear Savage, Sir No Sir from Move to Amend, and we hope to get permission to air a couple of more. I'd like to show some women rights-based films.
March is Women's History Month, so certainly that would be more than a welcome addition.
Yeah, we've run into some issues with licensing fees, but we're trying to make it as open to the public as we can.
Well, Shelby Wade, we wanted to thank you for all the hard work you've done on this very important event for Social Justice Week, and we'll certainly be chiming in with you. We'd also like listeners to know that we're going to be sharing some audio of the events on upcoming Project Censored shows. We will be playing Peter Dale Scott's speech. We'll be playing some of Mama C's speech. We certainly like to thank KWTF Radio and also Petaluma Community Access Television, PCA.TV, they'll be filming this. So we certainly will be sharing this with the public if you're not in Northern California. And again, Shelby, thank you so much for joining us today and your work on this event.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I actually have a good friend flying out from Minnesota who's going to attend the conference. So this is, anybody can come. It's free. All events are open to the public. Sonoma State Social Justice Week, March 23rd through the 27th.
To learn more, go to projectcensored.org or check out our Facebook page. That's our program for today. Thank you all for joining us. The Project Censored Show airs on over 20 stations around the United States. For more information and to listen to archives of previous shows, go to www.projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook. Anthony Fest is our producer. Pedro Reyes is our engineer. We'll see you next time.
Conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain, but my people getting tired of the pain and the shame. We're not commodities or cogs that turn the global economy. We're the promise of a legacy, a spirit we're honoring. An anomaly to those who can't imagine a world without oppressive forces slaving for almighty dollar bills. We won. We got the love of just our brothers and our sisters. We won. The people together can overthrow the system. We won. We got that love of just your brothers and your sisters. We won. The people together can overthrow the system. We won. We got the love of just our brothers and our sisters. We won. The people together can
apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burn bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fought for little boys. And the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity citizens. In the times when a master thief can buy and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu.